Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This week, we bring you the first episode of the new Delaware Humanities podcast, People and Planet. The podcast explores how Delawareans connect to the environments and cultures around them, and the cultural practices and creative works that bring us closer to the planet we call home. In this first episode, the focus is on the history and significance of agriculture in Delaware and its place in today's world. Egg Key, former Delaware Department of Agriculture secretary, joins the episode to discuss the deep roots of agriculture in Delaware and what the future holds for the state's agricultural industry. When we talk about where it all began for Delaware in terms of farming and agriculture, what are we talking about, Ed? What are kind of the earliest roots of ag in Delaware?
Well, the earliest roots really go back to 1631 with the settlement at Lewis with the Dutch, and then later on in Newcastle and eventually Wilmington. That was the colonial, very early colonial stage. But by the 1740s, and this region, not only Delaware, but northern eastern shore of Maryland, southeast Pennsylvania, was great for wheat. And the Brandywine River, because it had that terrific waterfall that, you know, drives grain mills, really became the center of grain milling, transforming wheat into flour and other crops as well. And that's in the 1740s when that really starts to show up in Wilmington on the river. By the Revolutionary War, the Delaware mill owners were exporting wheat and barley, other crops, to the Caribbean, to Western Europe, and even to the Mediterranean. So we go way back in beginning, and it's quite something.
What were some of the biggest shifts in Delaware when it comes to farming and ag? Things that over the course of years between what we just talked about and even present day, that kind of changed the trajectory significantly, whether due to technology, policy, economic factors. Were there some kind of mileposts where, like, this is where Delaware hit a fork in the road and went this way instead of that way?
It's a great question. So in move up to the before the Civil War in the 1850s, the first cannery in Delaware was in Dover in 1855, and that was the Richards and Robinson Canning Company, which is now the office building that houses Denrick, our state agency. And then the railroad was completed in 1859. So now Southern Delaware is really opened and has a good connection to markets. Via the railroad, they could ship produce, you know, fresh vegetables and fruit, as well as grain and flour, but vegetables and fruit to Philadelphia, to New York, to urban markets. And that was a big deal. Now, just in that same era, maybe a little bit earlier, 1832 was a man named Philip Rodbolt, and planted the first budded peach orchard over near Delaware City on the site. A budded orchard meant all the varieties could be the same. They weren't random. So they could have a critical mass and they could identify different varieties of maturity. So they had peaches maturing not only in 1 week, but maybe through a month and a half. And those peaches were shipped by water, up to the Delaware River, up to Philadelphia. So from the beginning, we were kind of an entrepreneurial group. So now you had ocean traffic followed up by the railroad connecting. And 1855, as I said, was the first cannery. That takes us to through the 1900s. We have railroad. We still have some water transportation, which includes the Chesapeake and Delaware Canal. And then in 1916, and it was completed in 1923, the DuPont Highway that T. Coleman DuPont financed personally and then gave that to the state.
Was there a point, Ed, where we started to really see what we can kind of consider the modern Delaware agriculture economy come into full view?
Yeah. So, you know, the chicken industry gets started in 1923, and it grows quickly. And the people in that part of Sussex County really grabbed on because they needed to a source of income. So it grew aggressively and spread over into Maryland But the real change to modern agriculture really begins after World War II. We had vets coming back from the service and taking advantage of the GI Bill. So, you know, they could go to college if they so choose. They all got $20 a month. But there was energy that came into the state. And the poultry industry really grew even quicker from, say, 1950 till today. Now, concurrent with that, what do chickens eat? Well, they eat corn and they get their protein from soybeans. So farming changed from a lot of the hand harvest crops, whether it was fresh market or vegetables, and the mechanization into the grain crops facilitated a farmer could generate income. Perhaps he had chickens as well, perhaps not, but growing corn, soybean, wheat, and barley, and selling that a lot, especially the corn and the soybeans, to the poultry industry. So you have this three-legged stool of the poultry industry being fed by the corn and soybeans that farmers grow. And up until the late 60s, the poultry industry pretty much, and there were a lot of national companies, meat companies like Swift and Armour that were operating here, but the industry moved towards vertical integration. And by 1960s, you had companies that ran the hatcheries, actually ran the breeding program for the birds were in the hatchery. Then the hatchery produced the young chicks for all the farmers to grow. Then the companies are doing the processing part and the marketing. So it's totally vertically integrated. And that brings the phenomenon of Frank Perdue, who his company was started in Maryland, but a large presence in Delaware today. In fact, that company has more employees in Delaware than has in Maryland. But he was the one who did the advertising in the New York and Boston market and really revolutionized poultry marketing and solidified the importance of that industry in our region and in our state. You'll recall he was the man that says it takes a tough man to make a dead chicken. And so from World War II on, we have hybrid corn, we have a growing poultry industry. We still have a significant vegetable industry, shipping watermelons and sweet corn, fresh market up and down the East Coast to chain stores. We have a really neat phenomenon of farmers from Long Island being pushed out of Long Island by the rapid development of housing out there. And so we had over 60 Long Island farm families migrate to Delaware from about 1945 to 1955. They were great potato growers, and most of them settled in Kent County, Dover and Smyrna area, some in Middletown. And that really brought a unique aspect into Delaware agriculture as well, because there's one true story. A Delaware farmer saw this crop growing in a Long Island farmer's field in Delaware, and he didn't know what it was, and he thought it was tobacco. Well, it turned out it was cauliflower. So there was some cultural things that came with that, and wonderful families, dedicated farm families. The other thing since the end of World War II was the science and technology of crop production. We had brand new molecules, new chemistry that would control fungus diseases, control insects, control weeds. And that really made a difference. So farmers could be more efficient with the mechanization and the new chemistries that have evolved and changed over the years, but still a force in what farmers do. And then the other big thing is irrigation. So I graduated from the University of Delaware in agriculture in 1973, and the census says there was about 21,000 acres of irrigated farmland in Delaware. Most of that is with aluminum pipe that kids like me would move across the field and irrigate the field. today, we've gone from 21,000 to about 175,000 acres of irrigated land. 90% of that are the center pivot systems that we see when we ride down country roads. And that has been a huge asset. So the and technology of the chemicals, of fertilizer use, you know, anything else, transportation, irrigation, and a growing poultry industry, and still a vibrant, it's smaller, but a vibrant fresh market and processing crops, processing vegetable crops as well. So we still have a probably about 40,000 acres of vegetables that are grown either for canning, freezing, or as a fresh product.
So we come to today now, and talk to me a little bit about kind of sustaining this industry. We hear a lot about sustainable farming in the current day. You know, can you tell us a little bit about what that is, what that means, what kind of impact it has on Delaware's agricultural landscape?
Yeah, it's sustainable. There's a lot of definitions that are pegged to sustainability. But my version of it is has two phases. The one phase is proper farming practices, appropriate applications, developing new approaches, you know, for a healthier soil that can be fertile without, you know, burning itself up through overuse. And so sustainable practices have to relate to profit. You can't separate sustainable and profitable. And you know, every business has to be sustainable by making money and making a profit. And fortunately, we have enough diversity, and especially with the irrigation, which we are blessed with plentiful aquifers that to keep all that going. But the other piece of sustainability, and it's especially filled with some anxiety here in Sussex County, and that's the incredible real estate development that's going on in rural Sussex County. And it's important to know that these aren't necessarily farmers who are selling the land. These are descendants, maybe three or four generations away from the farmer on that particular farm. Or they may have been investors over the years. A farm would come up to sale. Now, there are some farmers that are retiring, and that's their retirement package, frankly. Mm-hmm. But so I live in northern Sussex County on a farm near the little village of Lincoln. And there's developments all around my farm and going down to the East Coast. So consequently, you wonder, gee whiz, can we still support the poultry industry? Can we still have a vibrant, viable agriculture where the supply side has enough market to sell the fertilizer, the seed, the tractors, the trucks, and, you know, is that nucleus going to be here? And that's when very quickly Delaware agriculture becomes a part of Delmarva agriculture, and it all kind of comes together. So back in the 1850s, there was a group of Marylanders that wanted to succeed from Maryland and join Delaware, but they didn't get very far.
In a program that Delaware started, the Century Farm Program, which actually kind of highlights some of these long-term family farms and kind of boosts that kind of concept. Can you tell us a little bit about how that program kind of connects this greater idea of maintaining family farms?
It's basically a recognition and appreciation program where the state and specifically the Department of Agriculture helps farmers do the deed search. And if it has been in the same family for 100 years, you're recognized as a century farm. There was one in particular that went back to 1684, and it was a land grant from the William Penn himself. again, it's all about between the Ag Land Preservation Program and the Century Farming Program. It's a recognition by the state and the citizens of the state of Delaware that agriculture is important to our state, and we appreciate it.
How important, Ed, are farmers markets in this equation as well? They've grown substantially in recent years. How much do they also kind of play a role in kind of making these family farms sustainable by giving them that type of market to tap into?
That has been a really growing thing. You know, for years, the King Street Market in Wilmington was a big deal twice a week. And then with grocery stores and just society changing, got away from that. But back in 2006 is the year I want to mention. That's when the Lewis Market started. Yep. And it just hit a chord, and other towns have done the same thing. And so here's why they're important. They are a market that certain larger farmers are engaged in, and it might be surprising, you know, why is a farm that's growing 2,000 acres and has roadside or farm markets on their property, why do they participate? Well, because, you know, it's another good sales opportunity, frankly. So, but what's really been helpful is a large number of small farmers have participated. Some of these are part-time farmers. Some of these are the son and daughter of large farmer that have carved out their niche in one special crop or another. And so it's opened the door for small farmers. There are great farmers markets up and down the state now. But besides selling fresh produce, fresh, healthy vegetables and fruit, the other thing it does, which is really positive, is it gets farmers talking to consumers and consumers talking to farmers, and they listen to each other. And you can just tell the person that comes up to a booth at a farmer's market, they are just really pleased the farmer is there to explain the crop. I have one very good friend who thinks he's the greatest person of determining when cantaloupes are ripe. And so I visit with him, and whenever I tell his customers, I was the one that taught him how to do it. So you get a lot of fun. It's become a very important part of Delaware's agricultural fabric. And there's real money being made. I mean, it isn't millionaires, but it is income to the family, whether they're part of an existing farm or they have a small garden or somewhere between. The economic impact is real. I think Lewis cracked the $1 million mark in sales just last year, which is really terrific.
You mentioned at one point kind of sons and daughters of farmers, and I'm curious, what are we seeing from young people in farming? Are younger generations showing an interest to kind of maintain, sustain these things that we're talking about?
I think the youth is there. It's hard for anybody to get started from scratch. Right. And I've been around this for 50 plus years now, and there are some great stories. At the University of Delaware College of Agriculture, 70% of the students are women. And that is a trend that's going all across the country. And when I went to school, there were maybe two or three women in our class, in our individual class. And now, you know, the majority are young women who are smart. They're aggressive. They're not afraid of trying new things. They're not afraid of getting out in a lab with livestock and learning how to do that. So that's kind of exciting. And I think the other thing that draws women, a large percentage of those female students across the country are interested in veterinary science, or certainly animal science in general.
I was going to say, there has been a pretty concerted effort, not only at the university level, but even down into the high school level, to connect students to ag sciences. Do you feel like that's also kind of played a role in kind of keeping the young people interested and again, attracting more women into it?
It absolutely has. The vocational agriculture programs and the Future Farmers of America, which is, you know, connected to the vocational ag. First of all, Delaware has an outstanding program in high schools and middle schools up and down the state. At the college level, every year, there are about 30,000 graduates with a four-year Bachelor of Science degree in one discipline or the other of agriculture. 30,000 graduates each year, and there's about 60,000 jobs. So if you're a non-farm family and you have a child that's interested in science or economics, you know, stop on down to the ag school, because that's where 4 years, mom and dad will be happy. All that tuition is paying off into a lucrative job. I don't want to sound too enthusiastic, but I'm as excited about agriculture today as I did when I was 20 years old.
I want to jump back to preservation and conservation for a moment. Can you talk a little bit about how farmland preservation is tied to kind of broader land conservation efforts and how they kind of work hand in hand to really boost open space, essentially, in the state of Delaware?
Well, yes. It's important to note that the Delaware Ag Land Preservation Program is not necessarily a tool to influence development and where that happens. It is significantly and primarily the tool to preserve farmland. That's the deal. All this development that's happening, you know, is it a repeat of Newcastle County? Northern Newcastle County used to be dairy farms. Now that's all gone. And is that what we're doing down in the southern part of the state? So the state needs to ask that question and then to see what can be done about it. And it gets down to resources. You know, you build new houses, then you have to have more schools, more highways, you know, more services to provide. I think we're at a point where the leadership of the state, and I see this starting to emerge at the local level and perhaps the state level, starting to ask questions about this. Because it's not only about the economic impact of agriculture, it's the quality of life, open space, wildlife habitat, you know, it's all connected.
I was going to say, I mean, how much does that farmland and overall preservation fit into the concept of, say, like climate resiliency, right? That there is some need to maintain, as you mentioned, kind of ecosystems and habitats and things like that.
All habitats, conservation areas, whatever you want to call them, districts, you know, they're all interrelated with so many issues, but it boils down to quality of life, quality of the goods and the services, really, the state of Delaware offers to its citizens. I would contend that a strong, healthy agricultural industry with plenty of open space for farms is an incredible asset, not only economically, but again, the quality of life. Everybody wants to live at the beach right now, and I wave to them as they go by.
On the topic of agriculture and climate change, are there some climate related threats you worry about when it comes to farming and agriculture in Delaware?
You know, it's really interesting. You can tell farmers work outdoors. I haven't met a farmer yet in the last 10 years that doesn't believe in climate change. I mean, they see it, they live with it, they deal with it. And one of the things are more violent storms. But the other thing, right now, we're in a very dry time. The other one is saltwater intrusion, mm-hmm. which, we've seen it when we've had a big northeast storm coming across the Delaware Bay and hitting the Fowler Beach, Broadkill, Slaughter Beach area, the farms that are inland from that, right on the border of the wetlands and the farmland, there's been some saltwater intrusion. Lots of big issues, and I think we have leadership at the state level, both in the executive and the legislative branch, that are beginning to think about this stuff seriously. And the question is, what will Delaware be like 25 years from now?
As you think about the future of farming and agriculture in Delaware, what do you see in 10, 15, 20, 25 years? What do you see as the path forward for ag in Delaware?
I think the path forward is making sure our poultry industry is alive and well and managing the poultry manure. Tremendous improvements in our management and use of poultry manure. What used to be a disposal problem, now it's seen by farmers as an economic source of nutrients for their crops. Appropriate farm practices for our poultry industry and our crop growing industry will get us there. Making sure that the tax burden, whether it's property tax or other taxes, are not interfering. I mean, farmers may grumble about their taxes, but they realize it's, you know, every citizen has to pay their taxes and so forth, but make sure it's not skewed against them unfairly in any kind of way.
You've been listening to the Delaware Humanities podcast, People and Planet, with former Delaware Department of Agriculture Secretary Ed Key's discussion of the history and significance of agriculture in Delaware. The full podcast is available at DelawarePublic.org and DEHumanities.org. People and Planet is brought to you by Delaware Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities.